Welcome to Veterans Connected, where maintenance and reliability expert and military veteran Eric Bevavino connects with fellow veterans in industry during each episode, where they exchange their experiences and discuss the transition from the military to industry and the paths and resources that led them to where they are today. The Veterans Connected podcast is proudly produced by the industry's leading network and learning community, Mobius Connect. Eric, over to you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Eric Bevavino, host of the Mobius Connect podcast, focused on connecting military veterans to the maintenance and reliability community. My aim here is to bridge the understanding gap between military and civilian worlds, thereby improving veteran transition journey and ultimately providing hope and a helping hand to any of our brothers and sisters out there struggling to find their way. We'll do this by interviewing veterans who have successfully made it through. For this session, we've chosen to interview one such Army veteran, Dennis Elford, whose fascinating and patriotic story is a must listen for anyone interested in joining us on this mission. Hey, Dennis, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you joining us. We don't know each other super well, but we know each other well enough to understand that we're both veterans, and I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's get started with some background on who you are and where you grew up. And, you know, then we'll start dialing back into the early days.
Uh-oh, you're going to test my memory. Is what you're
going to try. That's right.
Or see if I have any memory left, right? Yeah. But, okay, so a little bit about myself. They know my name, Dennis. I was born in 1960, Detroit, Michigan. Grew up there until I was about nine. Parents couldn't see eye to eye. Mother and father divorced. Mother moved to Niagara Falls, New York, took us with her. So I grew up the second half of my life in Niagara Falls, New York. And when I was about 17, 18, I decided it was probably better for me to get out of that area. Wasn't doing bad, but I wasn't doing good. In that area. So I joined the military through the delayed entry program and jumped into service in 79 and put my boots on and started my training in Fort Dix, New Jersey as a wheeled vehicle mechanic and just progressed from there through the military. I did 21 years in the military and had various assignments, had deployed several times, been to Germany, been to Korea a couple of times, spent time at Fort Polk, Fort Hood in the United States. So went out all my service academies. I retired as an E-8, got out at time I felt was beneficial, had been deployed and separated from my family quite a bit. So I decided to bridge the gap. And at that time, they had what they call the ACAP program, Army Civilian Acquired Skills Program, that helped you somewhat try to transition to the military. And I was hired from one of their seminars by AutoZone to be a parts store manager. And that was going to be in Knoxville, Tennessee, where my father had moved to. And I didn't spend a lot of time with him growing up. Although we still had a close relationship, I wanted to be by him when I got out. So moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, and I started doing that. Quickly realized probably 3 to 4 months in that really wasn't my calling. I mean, the logistical background I had in the military kind of fed into it, right? But it's a little bit different when you get out. When people don't show up to work, the management team's covering down for them. So it didn't take me too long. It was a salaried job to realize that that wasn't exactly what I wanted to do at that time.
So in your military experience, were you always in logistics and automotive maintenance and that type of stuff from station to station?
Right. Yeah, I was. There was a even though I was still in a maintenance unit, I was a first sergeant for a period of time, but it was always in the maintenance realm.
Got it. So you got to see all kinds of different types of vehicles. Sure. So was that tanks and personnel carriers and missile launchers and, you know, like everything the Army has?
Or yeah, Jeeps, your 5 tons, 10 tons, your HETs. Back at that time, we used to call them gamma goats, and anyone that had been in and they can remember that long, know I'm really dating myself with that one. But yeah, it's always been maintenance, nuts and bolts, you know, nuts and bolts are nuts and bolts. And you've just got a, you know, few differences with different pieces of equipment you work on, but it's all nuts and bolts. And if you treat it like that, it tends to flow a lot better.
So is there a specialist rating in the Army for maintenance then, or mechanic like there is in the Navy? I mean, we've had machinist mates and, you know, electricians mates and everything like that. What's the Army version of that?
Right. They've got plenty of, they've got wheeled vehicle maintenance. They've got some engineering jobs. They've got different levels, depot level maintenance, what you'll call like a 63 hotel. There's a 63 Bravo. And as you transition through the military and gain higher pay rates or ranks in the military, when my ending was a 63 Zulu, which encompasses all the maintenance. It's not just a specialty in, you know, the second shop echelon maintenance where they're rebuilding engines and or the PM side of the maintenance, the light vehicle mechanics where they're doing everything up to, but not including rebuilding engines, transmissions, or differentials. So always been in it. And the one thing is even though the equipment's the same, the management of the people and the processes remain the same. You've just got different types of equipment. So that would be the major difference there.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting because, I mean, you have had a variety of experience, as have I, and certainly this podcast is intended to really address maintenance and reliability from almost a process manufacturing perspective, like power plants and perhaps even mining, and that really touches on your experience, which is the wheeled vehicle maintenance, the logistics, the transportation, because no matter where you are in manufacturing, there's always a logistics component of it, whether it's just transferring materials from one side of the facility to the next, or if you're in mining, I mean, the wheeled vehicles are how you make money. And certainly in the industry of, you know, carrying loads and carrying packages like the one that you're in now, it's, I mean, your assets are your money makers, right?
That's so absolutely. Yeah,
this is quite interesting because I think you're the first person that we've had on. I mean, we're probably, I don't know, up to 10 episodes, but you're probably the first person with such a depth of knowledge and experience in vehicle maintenance instead of stationary equipment maintenance. So this is really, really interesting stuff. And for me, being a Navy guy, I don't have any idea what happens in the Army. I assume it's the same.
we would think so.
Yeah, but it's not on the water. You know, the maintenance is usually on ground or on sand or in the hills or whatever. But this is, wow, what a great place to learn about maintenance. So what did you have leadership? Clearly you were an NCO by the time you retired. So, you know, what sort of leadership opportunities did you see coming up through the ranks? I mean, were you able to manage a shop or a storeroom? I mean, any similarities to what you see now in the civilian world in those leadership roles?
Sure. Absolutely. You know, and they basically mirror or mimic each other. You know, you start off just like in the military, you know, you come in, you're private, you know, PFC specialist, and then you might be a team chief where you've got two or three people underneath you. followed by maybe after that being a squad leader who has a squad with a couple of teams under them, and then may progress to platoon sergeant, you know, that has a platoon that has obviously four squads to it and numerous teams. So, you know, each step up, you've got a little bit more equipment, a responsibility, and things that you need to do. And, you know, as I transferred out, one of the things to remember or understand when you're transferring out, a lot of the attributes that you have in the military are very, very sought after in the real world or in the civilian world out here. And one of the most sought after things are not only your knowledge of what you do on the mechanical side, but the leadership. That's, you know, the leadership, the commitment, the dedication that you gain through the military. Because I went through primary leadership school, NCO academies. I went through ANOCs, BNOCs, then which are advanced non-commissioned officers course, primary non-commissioned officer course, basic technical school, primary technical schools, and a lot of those, you know, build on the leadership realm. And as you transition, remember, one of the things is I know a lot of people like myself. I got out, I was basically at the height of where I could have went. I could have went to E9. But that's the highest I could have been. I was the E8 when I got out. So, you know, we're at the top of our profession when we get out. And you've got to understand that when you transition out, I feel that the one of the most important things is you've got a very nice resume and a portfolio that you can offer a company. But you won't transition over at the same grade or rate or levels of responsibility for the most part as you had when you got out of the military, when you retired. I mean, you know, what I said went, but in the military before I get out. But when you get out, you've got to kind of readjust and refocus yourself. Yes, the companies are out there. They're looking for some of this stuff, but they, like the company I work for, okay, they want military. They want those people to come in those doors. But I was a E8, I was a first sergeant. So, you know, I had 150 people under me. And, you know, you can go on with the equipment and the buildings, the facilities, but I was not coming over that level of where I was at. So when I got tired of the parts company that I worked with, I found a package delivery company. I just happened to be talking to one of the technicians that came into the AutoZone store who was having some issues trying to turn a starter in. He didn't have the receipt, and we could go. That's another story in itself. But they finally turned him over to me. I was the manager on duty, and we started talking about it. And I took care of him because he looked like a, you know, an honest person. I believed what he was telling me. I knew it was a starter from the store that I worked at, from the company I worked at. So I traded it in, and I told him he had a work uniform on, and it happened to have UPS on it. And I asked him, I said, man, that's the company I need to work for. And he said, well, you know, he said, they love prior service people. They probably love to talk to you. And he gave me a phone number inside the building, not out of the building. So it's very difficult to get the number to get someone inside the building, right? And it was a long and drawn out process to get hired, you know, because of the levels of interviews and the things that you have to do. But I was offered an opportunity, but it was they want you to progress through their system. They like to promote from within. Now, there's been more hiring from outside to inside, but I went back out on the floor, pulling engines, differentials, transmissions. I was doing services, and I started working third shift. That's just the way it went. And you've got to show your, they can read your resume, they can understand what you know, but you've got to show them. It's leadership 101. You know, you lead from the front. It's do as I say, not as I do, you know, and show them that you're committed to them, and good things will happen. To tell you the truth, Eric, I never envisioned a second job or career. So I will tell you, this is a career for me now. I've been with them 22 years, but I started out as a technician. Okay. And about 9 months down the road, and they told me when I came in, because I, you know, I've had my resume done and, you know, you have people highlight the things you do. They told me from Jump Street, they were looking at me for somewhere down the road. Okay. They had, you know, they had ideas or things that they wanted me to do, or that was the thought process then, is they evaluated me and I came in and worked for them. They liked my work ethic, what I did. And 9 months later, I was a supervisor. So as a supervisor, I took over a shop that had 7 technicians, probably 320 delivery vehicles, and had to manage the logistics operation and the people. And from there, I was afforded the opportunity to move on as a manager, where it's just another step up. So as a manager, I had a larger area and I had numerous supervisors under me.
And, I'll give you a break there, Dennis. I mean, what you said here in the last 5 minutes or so, I mean, there's a lot there, man. I mean, and great, great points that haven't been brought up before on this podcast. So this idea of being mentally prepared as you come off of one successful career, this is so important. Being prepared to be humble and in sort of step down a role, right? Because I mean, you were a first sergeant coming out. I mean, you were telling people what to do, right? You had the grand plan, you have $1 million of responsibility, 150 folks in here, and you are humble enough to start out turning wrenches, rebuilding engines and transitions, because you found, and this is point number two, you found a veteran oriented or a veteran a company that appreciates veterans and are looking for them, and was also not leading you along, so to speak, but they said, okay, well, we've got bigger plans for you. You can hear that from a lot of people, but they actually put their money where their mouth was. And 9 months later, you're, you know, a shift supervisor, you're getting more responsibility, you're seeing things happen. I think a lot of vets who transition, they want to go to some big money thing or a quick hit thing, or even transition at the same level that they got out, which can be tough, right? But you got to earn your stripes again. And look at you, you got a 22 years now in a second career. That's the really cool thing that the military offers folks, is you can have multiple careers, and the whole psychological bend of, hey, I did this, this was my personality and my identity. Now I'm retired. I'm not doing that anymore. Well, I'm just going to do something else till I get to 65 and then I'm done. Well, if you start at 18 and you go 20 years, you're only 38 when you're retiring. Right? Exactly. There's a lot of living left to go. And I mean, there's so many people you can impact positively, and yourself, your family, and other folks with the leadership capabilities that you have. And I think the last thing that I wrote down here on your story is that you made the contact and you networked in your current job, and it was the value of a face-to-face, really just chance conversation. But if you're not going to put yourself out there, and if you're not going to have those conversations, like, hey, what do you do? Who do you work for? Mm-hmm. Oh, you think you can get me in there? Oh, I can get in the building instead of going, you know, through five layers of bureaucracy to get going. I mean, it makes such a difference, the people you know. And then the old adage about who you know is more important than what you know. What you know is important for sure. But this networking example, and really that was sort of a chance opportunity. I think it sounded like you knew you were looking for something else. And, you know, here comes somebody that needs some help. You're helping them out. And, you know, it you know, returns in spades. So pretty cool. Yeah. That's a cool story. And I didn't mean to cut you off. I know you were, yep, you know, kind of going there for a while. And, so you left off at, where did you leave off? Pulling engines, third shift, you had made it through, and you're still continuing. Mm-hmm. I think you were still describing the continuation of your career there and what it led to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, and I will tell you this, Eric, when I started there, I never had thought that I was going to have a second career. I was looking for something to augment my retirement, you know, just to help me out along the way until I decided to hang it up. Just so happened, you know, I got, you know, involved with this company, and, you know, I enjoy maintenance. I enjoy working with people, dealing with people, helping people out. A lot of the things that I gathered from my military career. So, you know, from them, I became a manager. I was, you know, they offered me a promotion to a manager. So I had, you know, basically almost a full state versus just a little, you know, couple counties of the state. I had four supervisors and 28 buildings and over 1,000 pieces of equipment. So, you know, and I had to travel a lot with that job, but I enjoyed it. And, you know, when you enjoy working with people and things of that nature, it just all works together. The company treated me well. And, you know, I basically just went in and put my head down and went to work, just like I did in the military. You know, you talked about, you know, you picked up that, you know, I kind of humbled myself and said, well, I'm going to go in and, you know, we're going to go from there. And that's what I did. And as people transition and get out and look for places to go, when you're looking for maybe a second career, some people are, some people aren't. I wasn't, but it turned into one, and a very, you know, a very rewarding one for me, I will say. You got to, you know, just put your head down and go to work. I mean, and
right on.
And let your work speak for itself. But you've also got to pick, I would say, the right company, or the right size company. Maybe that's better said. You know, if you go to a small mom and pop place, you know, you've got to look at where you want to be down the road. What opportunities are there now? You know, you see brown trucks all over the United States and all over the world. So there's a lot of opportunity there. Now, I never would have in my wildest days thought that, you know, I would be doing what I'm doing now for them as a director of maintenance and engineering. But it worked out that way. And, you know, the hard work, dedication, the communication skills, the leadership skills, you know, all of that came from the military. All of it. I grew up in the military.
Right. Well, exactly. Right. I mean, we can go through our, you know, teenage years, right? But we were made men and women, for the ladies out there, right? In the military, it's where you discover the like the no shit moment that like this is real when you're being screamed at for the first time, and I don't know if they use this vernacular in the Army, but in the Navy they say you're lower than whale shit at the bottom of the ocean, and that's that's how you feel. But yeah, they break you down and build you up. And I think your comment about the size of the organization makes a ton of sense too, because you can come out of a giant, I mean, the military is this giant operation, right? Worldwide, all sorts of levels of systems to support the individual, training systems that are probably the best in the world, made for the lowest common denominator, but also taking you up through general officer ranks and admiral ranks and everything. You mentioned the NCO Academy, ANOC, PNOC. You know, we have pre-XO and pre-CO schools, which I have yet to encounter in the civilian world. Maybe you have them where you're at, but certainly the size of the organization lends itself that has similarities to really this big giant military that we just got out of. Now, if they're small unit operators and they're just used to being 3, 4, 10 people at a time, then maybe they want something more entrepreneurial that fits their style. But they ought to, I think veterans, anybody's listened to this, certainly can see you as a resource, see me as a resource, anybody who's been on the podcast to sort of guide them or mentor them through that process, understand, you know, where they've been. And it's just, there's so many stereotypes about not only about corporate America, like, gee, this looks like a great company, I'm going to go in there. And then you get in and you find it's not what you thought it was, or it's more than what you thought it was, or whatever. But, you know, it's pretty daunting for folks, especially if they're getting out after their first tour. Now you got out after 22 years, so it's a different kind of daunting for you, but yeah. Fascinating stuff, and I think really, really important for our listeners to hear. So moving on, Dennis, did we cover everything you wanted to cover on your career and where you were? And I mean, did you have any influences when you were growing up in the military? I mean, was there a movie or anything that inspired you to go in, or anybody that you knew, or is it just that was?
I wanted to travel. Okay. Yeah. And you know, the funny thing is I wanted to travel and I wanted to go and see some things. And, you know, it started out to be because I wasn't ready for college. I'll just tell you that. There was no way I was ready
for college.
It's okay. It would have been a waste of money. Okay? I would have been donating to the university, right?
Yeah.
So I started out to travel. And, you know, I guess looking back at it, I can remember one time where I was like kind of like at a crossroads, and I was close to 8-10 years in the military, and I was like, okay, now, you know, I did a reenlistment and everything, and then it was like, okay, am I going to get out? And then I started weighing, yeah, I said, well, heck, next year I'm going to be halfway to the end zone, right? So what do I do? So, you know, at that point in time is when I turned and I said, you know, I think this is where I'm going to go and what I'm going to do. But it all just started to get out and just see the world a little bit. But I
will. Yeah, that's, well, hey, that's a good as reason as any, right? Until you find yourself in Afghanistan or Iraq and say, oh, this wasn't one of the places on my list, my bucket list to see. But you know, it's all part of the program, I guess, right?
But I do want to say one thing, you know, and I don't want to forget this. I wrote it on a piece of paper in bold letters, right? I did not do in the military or where I'm at now. I did not get to where I'm at, or I did not do the things that I was able to do by myself.
Mm.
Okay. There's people involved. Okay. People that I mentored, people that mentored me and brought me along. It's very, you've got to remember the people. Okay. I'm not successful. You know, I may have certain attributes or certain things that I've done, or certain talents that people have identified that have helped me along the way. But, you know, it's that private that I've told to dig a foxhole or to go out on guard duty, or that technician that I said, you've got to go out on the road where this vehicle is down and do that, that had enough respect and trust and confidence in my abilities to, and I'll say lead, because that's what we learn to do in the military, lead. And that's what companies need on the outside, lead, that they executed, and they executed the tasks well to have an outstanding result. So there's a whole lot of people that I owe gratitude in the military and in the civilian world for where I'm at now. Yeah, I'm driving the car right now, but you know what? Someone had to build the engine. Someone had to install the engine. Someone had to do the interior. You know, it took everybody to get the car that I'm driving down the road.
Well, very, very well said, Dennis. And I would say all of us have a lot of people to thank. And thank you for mentioning that. I mean, it's not only true, but it shows a humble nature and appreciation for the people who came before you, the people who signed up to be led by you, who knew that they would probably be giving you some tips along the way. Sure. as well. And it just goes into this sort of awareness of the virtuous cycle of leadership, that you can be in charge, but you can also take advice, and you know, you got to be willing to do what you're asking your folks to do. Right.
Absolutely. It's, you know, one of the earlier things that I said, do as I do, don't do as I say. You know, if I'm telling you to jump in a ditch and dig it, you know, but I'm not going to do it myself because I think it's above me, or, you know, that's that you don't gain the results, or you don't, that you would like to gain. You'll get results, right? But you can probably get results at a different level.
Lead from
the front.
Oh, is that my dog or is that your dog? That must be my dog. Sorry about that. I think that'll probably subside in a second here. Let me see if I can turn this down. I've got a very sensitive microphone and he's sounding the alarm, but so tremendously, tremendously important. And I think one of the things that you're highlighting here is that the system that the military has lends itself to teach you the appreciation. Like when I got to my first ship, and maybe when you got your first large unit and you were an NCO, but you had senior enlisted folks or other NCOs reporting to you, you know, they realized that it was part of their job to help me out, to help you out. And we realized it was part of our job as leaders to also be good followers at times too. And really, I think the entire country could learn a lesson, and part of our job, not only to help veterans here, but to help, you know, in healing, you know, the divisiveness that's going on today. But beautifully said. Thank you for that. And so Frisco's calmed down. That's good news. We probably don't have anybody breaking into the house right now, so that's good.
Hey, if I see someone in the mirror behind you, I'll
let you know. Yeah. I can't get out my 6 hour right now because we're videotaping. I don't want anything to be caught on film, but all good, brother. So, any advice? I mean, you've given some advice throughout, and this is good, but any other advice you would have to give any service member planning to transition to the civilian world that, like, you wish you had when you made the move?
You know, I guess the biggest thing that I can say is be honest, be transparent. Okay. One of the things that they asked me when I was going to the initial interview, and they told me, you know, we are looking for you down the road. You've got a lot of management experience we'd like to tap into. But because we like to promote from within, I need you to go back out on the floor and do the legwork, the transmissions, the engines, the services and stuff. And they said, can you do that? And I said, well, yeah, I can do that. It's been a while. And they knew it had been a while since I had done that type of repairs, because usually I'm, you know, issuing, managing the work, or as a first sergeant, you know, I'm not only down in the motor pool, but I'm, you know, at a bunch of different other tasks that I had to accomplish. I was transparent with them and said, you know, I could do the work, but, you know, will I be able to maintain the time standards or the book times or the shop times that you want me to maintain? I said, probably not. I said, but I'll get the job done. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I said, I'll get the job done right. And, you know, the vehicle won't come back. And so they understood that. And because sometimes we want, you know, we're afraid to say something like that, or people are afraid because maybe we don't get the call to perform. You know, we don't say, hey, I want to hire you. Would you like to come work with us? And, you know, that's a possibility. But I think being transparent and straight above board with them and let them know exactly what they're getting is what is going to sway them. And like I said, picking and choosing where you want to go. There's a lot of places in the maintenance field. You know, everywhere you see a truck, you know, you see Frito-Lay, you see UPS, you see FedEx, you see Amazon, you see Kroger, you see Chick-fil-A trucks delivering. All of those people need some people to manage and manage their maintenance facilities and the logistics of them and their people. So when you're looking for where you might want to go, if you say, hey, I want to go and work in maintenance still, you know what? Go park at a truck stop on an interstate and write down the names of all the companies with big rigs or something like that to come in. And I tell you what, in 5 or 10 minutes of just sitting in that truck stop, you'll have 20 leads that you might need to chase down. And one of the things I will say, bigger companies, a lot of times they're using recruiters or they're doing different types of hiring practices. As you had alluded to, what I did is I kind of networked while I was at work. If you know there's a Frito-Lay company in there and they've got a terminal or a Coca-Cola company or a Pepsi company in the town that you work in, there's nothing that says you can't go and walk. I mean, you can go and see if you can get in, or you can sit in the parking lot and as you see people coming to work, may introduce yourself and say, hey, do you know, can you give me a number? Because a lot of those companies insulate themselves because they get inundated with calls, right? So to get that inside call, you got to be creative. You got to think outside the box and do some things outside the box. And you would be surprised what you can find or the information you can gain. Hey, that if you're sitting at rest stop, Eric, that truck has a driver and that driver goes back to that terminal. And I guarantee you that driver has a phone number to that shop if that right. truck stop, right? Yep. So a little bit of homework there, you know, goes that. I mean, those are just things that, you know, I think of that can help you gain your foot in the door for, you know, a larger company with a large maintenance fleet that may need some management or some leadership, really both.
No, great ideas and being prepared. And I think, you know, what we're talking about is just, you know, look around you. I mean, there are signals all around you if you're willing to take the time and the initiative, and certainly never show up for an interview without knowing something about the company that you're going into and doing yourself a favor. I mean, talking to folks like us or reading a book and translating your military services to the parlance of the civilian world and what's happening is very helpful. So great ideas, Dennis. Thank you. And I think the next question, almost towards the end of the interview here, we've got what guidance would you share with corporate hiring managers as veterans? I'm sure you've hired people and looked at a bunch of resumes about hiring veterans that they need to know to get the best military fit for the positions they're looking to fill.
What I tell them is they've got to generalize. There's a different jargon that the military uses to discuss their careers and what they do than the civilian world uses, okay? So you've got to be able to cross them over and understand them. And one of the things I tell them is there, you know, I get involved with internships, and when I was down in Tennessee by Fort Campbell, every other month or so, I would be going down into it used to be called the ACAP Center, where people would funnel through to get out. They'd help build resumes and things of that nature. And they also have books or guides that translate military jargon into civilian jargon. So not only does the companies that I talk to and get involved with have to know how to cross things over, but we need to know how to cross things over as a military member, so that when I'm putting my resume together and passing it out, that you read and they understand what they're reading, okay? And they can translate it to, oh, this is a need in my company. And, you know, one of the important things is we talked about the networking. I can give you my resume and you can read through it and you'll gain an opinion one way or the other, whether, yes, I should talk to him again, I should hire him again or not. But if I bump into you and shake your hand and introduce myself and talk to you about what I'd like to do and then give you my resume, there's a more profound effect on a person there. You can read someone's resume and then meet them and talk to them and have a 180 opinion from one to the other. You know, I'm sure you've seen that. It's just like a letter written, you know. Communication is a two-way street. There's a sender and a receiver, and, you know, not necessarily what you send is received by them in a certain fashion, right?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. Well, the person-to-person interaction, and now that we're getting out of COVID and, you know, we're going to date this, timestamp this thing as like post-COVID, right?
Yeah, right.
And getting out with folks, I mean, I'm sure you're finding this as well, but there's nothing like being with other human beings, you know, face to face. I think we need that. And we have so many sort of subliminal feelers out there all the time that if we get a good gut feeling from somebody when we meet them, it almost, as long as the resume, you know, is kind of what they said or in the ballpark, right, you're good, right? So that's a little bit of the afterthought. Whereas if you were leading with a resume and that's who you are, that's, or that's what you're banking on. Now, I mean, it's the digital age, so people have to do so much on their resumes, but it's really the face-to-face that matters, whether it's contrived, you know, or, you know, an accidental meeting or whatever, or a regular interview. Just, you know, I think what you're saying here too, as well, if I can paraphrase, be yourself, be transparent, and, you know, do your homework and be ready, be willing to take a step back, be humble and be honest, look for a culture that you can integrate into and be open-minded.
You know, and I'll, you know, with that, just like we talked about, take a step back. You know, I did take a step back, or even two steps back. You know, when you start talking about going back out on the floor, I would have never took 10 or 15 steps forward.
Nah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
You know, just to be honest there, you know, I would have never took 10 or 15 steps forward, you know, with, you know, what I've been able to do and the things that I've been afforded the opportunity to do and go and see. It's just, I can't thank the military, the company I work for now, UPS, enough for all the opportunities.
No, it's a really cool story, and you know, congratulations on your accomplishments. When I hear of taking a step back, I remember my baseball coach in high school and earlier playing the outfield. You hear the crack of the bat, and your first step is back, right? Assess the situation. Where's the ball? Then you can, you know, go a million miles an hour at it, or you got to run towards the fence and figure out, you know, how you're going to navigate the crash. Right. Yeah. So this has been great, Dennis. Thank you so much for sharing and joining us on this mission. Is there anything we didn't cover today that you wanted to make sure you related to our listeners, or did you feel like we covered it all?
No, I think, heck, I could probably talk another half hour, 45 minutes. You just never know. But, you know, as listeners go and listen to this, if you got any questions or want, you know, second opinions, or, you know, I can come back and with you and address some things at a later time and date, or whatever. I'm open. Like I said, I for a long time with UPS on previous roles, I did a lot of hiring and everything, and it was always military first for me, you know, always military first. You know, I went and seeked out military members by going to the transition centers and things of that nature. And I'm no problem.
Thanks, Dennis. So people can find you on LinkedIn, I guess, is probably the best social media. Would that be?
Yeah. Okay. I'm out there.
Good deal. All right. And we'll certainly let you know if more questions come in after the podcast and, you know, we have sort of roundtable or whatever we do next on this, we'll keep you in mind. So thank you for that. And yeah, really thank you and Mobius for providing this platform to help transitioning vets as well as those looking to hire them in the field of maintenance and reliability. Thank you, Dennis. We really appreciate it, buddy.
Great. Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. That's a wrap.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Veterans Connected. We will see you back for another episode very soon. In between, we hope to see you in the Veterans Connected community group, where you can meet Eric and fellow podcast guests and share with other industry veterans at MobiusConnect.com. And we hope to see you there.